guest today is Dave Bernard. Dave, how you doing?
Doing great, Dave.
Thanks for being on my show. I know this sounds like an easy question, but I understand for you it's kind of a difficult one. What do you do for a living?
Well, my career has been in technology as software developer for decades, actually. And about 11 years ago, I started my own company, technology company, doing mainly web-based systems, larger line of business systems for companies actually around the world, government systems, commercial systems. And since then, the company's been successful enough that we've taken our excess earnings from that and turned it into other deals.
Ah.
So we're actually running four companies right now in various ways related to technology, and we're starting at least probably two more this year before the year's out, and then we'll have additional ones after that. So really, I'm really more of a portfolio manager these days, but I have a deep technology background. I love starting companies. I love entrepreneurs and executing on new ideas.
You mentioned the company is global. Most of these companies you're starting have a global presence. Is that right?
I would say so, yeah. I'm more interested in things that can scale to around the world. So I don't want something that's too local because it gives me a little more market areas to go into.
So when you say local, are you talking about the customers? Are you talking about your employees? Are you talking about the capital? What's
more the market.
Just
you know,
market.
Global markets, and you know, even for resources like employees, we do look globally for that because I think there's talent all over the world that can be used in our business.
Let's talk about this. This is a trend in the last 20 years. We've seen more and more is people like yourself are based in the U.S. are getting more and more people, more and more employees from other parts of the world. And you've been doing that for a long time, right?
Yeah, I've been doing it for more than 10 years now. And it actually, for me, it's just plain economics. As a startup entrepreneur, it took a lot of risk out of the equation for me because the cost differential for using people from other countries is so much better than the U.S. market, you know, quite frankly. And the talent level I have found is very, very good. It's as good, if not better, than the U.S. in a lot of places that I've been. You know, it's uneven in places. I would say the biggest differences I've run into over time is you have to be aware of certain cultural differences. You have to be aware of how business is done in those countries, from things as arcane as attorneys and accountants. For instance, in some countries, the employees don't even know what their full salary is because the employer pays taxes on their behalf. So when they're pitched a job, their salary is just net. So they're pitched their net salary. They're not pitched the gross.
That sounds like more honest here.
Yeah, it's a little bit more that way. And we have other countries where you're kind of expected to pay a 13th month of salary as a bonus. You know, it's just kind of things like that. So knowing those things it helps a lot toward making those relationships strong and effective.
So there's a lot of people that are trying that global employee model, and they're not succeeding. Is that probably the main reason of these cultural differences?
I would say that's one. I think a corollary to that is that you've got to go and engage these people in person on some basis. So, for example, we go and visit our offshore teams at least twice a year, sometimes more frequently than that. And just that in-person relationship building is extremely important. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, by and large, they love having visitors come and they get a chance to show off their country and be hospitable to you. I'd say the other thing that I think that we do very differently than a lot of people, and I've talked to people, I've talked to the folks at Coca-Cola who run a multi-billion dollar outsourcing operation there. Mm-hmm. I think the mistakes that they make to me are they try to micromanage the process.
Interesting.
And, you know, I've been a hiring manager for decades, and I always thought, well, why wouldn't you trust people if you're going to hire them? You know, why aren't you trusting them? So I treat our offshore people much the same way. I hired them, I trust them, and I got to trust them to do the right thing. So to me, I think you can go way overboard trying to write too much of a specification for them to do. Let them do some thinking. Let them push back ideas on you. Let them own the architecture and the design. You know, we do that with our teams. We push everything down to the teams. They are really a big extension for us, and also that's the only way it really scales for me. Because if I can't scale my business if I've got to be in the details on every little project.
Okay.
Or I have to hire a manager who does that.
Right.
So I increase my cost.
So that's got to be that seems like you're increasing the risk by not only are you putting a lot of that trust for people to do architecture, delivery, schedules. But you're also, you can't check up on them every few days. You're not there. I mean, we do check on it. It's a phone call. It's not a visit.
So we have a lot of controls in place. For example, we use an online project management tool called Assembla. There are many like this. It's not unlike Basecamp, which a lot of people will use.
Yeah, I use Basecamp.
And all the team members have to put their hours in very exactly into the system on a regular basis. They cannot leave without putting their hours in during the day. Also, their descriptions of the tasks they're doing and all that kind of stuff is captured in great detail. So we actually do almost all of our communication through the online project tool. It becomes a vast knowledge base for this stuff. So we have a very exact tracking and history of all the tasks to a very granular level. So we can monitor this as, you know, on a daily basis, weekly, monthly, however we want to do it.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, I think if you get into this kind of business, you've got to be results-oriented. You cannot be too worried about, you know, what's happening every minute of the day.
Yeah.
It's results.
What? Where are you outsourcing to? Are these the traditional places, the India, the China, Southeast Asia?
We've done, over the last 10 years, I think at one time I counted, I'd probably worked with people in about 20 different countries. We now only work really in one country, and that's Bulgaria, and we love the Bulgarians there.
Why Bulgaria?
Well, we found that a couple of things. At the end of the day, I would say that it's the best bang for the buck for us.
Okay.
So it's the best return on investment. It's a very reasonably priced. It's probably the cheapest place in Europe, just on a dollar basis. But the talent level is way above average there. And one of the things we found, and I actually found this out after the fact, is that during the Soviet era, the Bulgarians were the outsourced computer makers for the Soviet bloc.
Oh, okay. So they've already been trained in this computer science.
They have a history of it, an ecosystem, an educational system that supports that. So they're disproportionately well prepared for that kind of business.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the same same thing happened in India during the dot-com boom. Is so many people invested in India because it was an English-speaking country, more or less. And then when that bubble burst, investors left, but they left the infrastructure behind. People were educated. There was high-speed internet in place. There was communication channels to the West.
Yes.
And so.
And I think, you know, one of the things, if you're going to do this, you have to look into scale. So actually a problem I could have in Bulgaria is that Bulgaria is a small country. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to find unlimited numbers of resources in Bulgaria. It's just a small country. India, you know, which is a billion people, you know, the average, the law of averages says you're going to be able to find plenty of talent in a place like
that.
Yeah,
China, for example, same way.
So the other thing I would say, there's certain cultural things that really appeal to me about the Bulgarians. And in a lot of cultures, it's very antisocial to say no to the boss or argue with the boss. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. If I'm an entrepreneur or I'm trying to build a company and be very quick on my execution, I need to know when I'm doing something wrong. I need my team to tell me, that's a bad idea, Dave.
Okay.
And, you know, so I really rely on these guys to push back on me and tell me when I've done something wrong. So we encourage that in our teams. And to find people that are able to do that actually is difficult. That's one big attraction with the Bulgarians. I love it when they tell me, when they help me avoid a big mistake.
Right.
You don't get that with every culture. And the Bulgarians, they're just like the perfect mix. And, you know, I think there's other folks in Eastern Europe. I've heard similar things about Romanians and Poles.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that mix of being able to be very strong technically, they're good managers, they want to be engaged. They love the fact that we trust them with architecture design and the business rules.
Mm-hmm.
So they, in many cases, they know the business better than our customers know their own business.
Mm.
I've had many examples of that.
I'm fascinated by the cultural aspects of it. Is there anything that you didn't know going into Bulgaria?
Oh,
you had to learn
a lot of things.
That
So the first thing that I had to learn, I learned this before I even went, and I had to get my people there to confirm it, was that nodding your head means no, and shaking your head means yes. And I had a real hard time with that in the beginning. And
that's awesome.
Exactly. So you're sitting there next to a developer, and you're talking about it, and she'll say, "Oh, this is such a great idea. I really love this." And you pick up on body language,
sure.
And your mind goes a little nuts. And I remember I'll tell you a little story. I actually was my first week there. Actually, I was in the little cafeteria in this building where the team worked, and we would go down there to eat lunch every day, and we ate lunch this day. And there were four of us, three Bulgarians and me, sitting there. And this young programmer was sitting across from me, and he said something funny, or said something to the other guys, and they just cracked up laughing. I said, "What's so funny?" And my project manager, Ivan, he said, "Well, Nikolai wants to know why you're so negative about everything." You know, and it was a very funny thing. And what we found is that they're sensitive to that there. I mean, they try to...
They're aware of the fact that there's this...
Absolutely.
...body and language difference.
When we worked with the military there on a contract, at first I thought they were a little rude because they wouldn't move their heads at all. Mm. They were trying to be polite.
Right.
By not doing it the wrong way.
Not to send the wrong signal.
So they would just be very stiff doing that. So that, little things like that, I think that you learn there, but by and large, it's a beautiful country. It's a wonderful. There's so much history. These people have been through a lot in the last 500 years. So I just find that fascinating. Just new people, new cultures is a lot of fun for me.
Is there any challenges with dealing with different governments?
I would say yeah. When we worked on a project there with the government. I may be oversimplifying this, but essentially, in the U.S., if there's not a law against it, you can do it.
Good.
Okay. In Bulgaria, it's much the opposite. You can't do it unless the law specifically says you can. Mm. And we ran into some of those issues while we were there, and just understanding that they pretty much don't move. It kind of stifles innovation in a lot of ways.
Okay.
In a place like that, they have to wait. The military always had to wait for the government to pass a law for them to be able to change some of their procedures and things like that. So when we were building systems for the military, we often had to wait for this legislation to pass through. They were expecting it to go. They anticipated it to go, but we couldn't actually do anything until it was finalized.
Hmm.
So there's some of that. And we had a couple of incidences of that we had to actually ask the U.S. Embassy to help us with while we were there.
What about exporting technology? Is that an issue at all?
No, not really. Not that I know of. I never ran into that.
There are no borders as far as intellectual property goes.
Not that I'm aware of. You know, they're since I've been working there, they became part of the EU.
Okay. And that probably made things easier.
It was scary at first because becoming part of the EU also introduced VAT, value-added tax.
Okay.
And we were very uncertain at the time, I remember, whether that was going to affect our services, whether we were going to suddenly have to have an extra 20% of cost.
Ah.
And we actually got the government to give us a letter that said, no, your services are exempt from that. So that was good for us. But other than that, they had become a member of NATO earlier, so there was that gave them an impetus, actually, from the military standpoint, of learning English. So when I first started going there, Russian was the second language, not English.
Mm, okay.
Very few English speakers. But the technology people do learn English in school.
Okay.
And they're actually very good English writers. So if you were reading the emails, it would be hard for you to tell.
Interesting. So it's writing prose, not writing code you're talking
about.
Yes,
exactly.
Interesting. Anything we haven't talked about that we should have?
I would say that the other thing I would say that is happening now, when I first started offshoring in Bulgaria, it was almost, we felt that when I was talking to customers, we didn't hide the fact that we did it, but we didn't put it out in front either, because some people were kind of caught up in the, it's got to be onshore development, it's got to be Americans building it and things like that.
Okay.
That has softened up considerably.
Okay, you're talking about the emotional response to people in Detroit who maybe had their own jobs outsourced.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And basically, even now the investment community will often ask an entrepreneur, why aren't you using offshore resources? That's much more efficient.
So it's actually flipped over.
Yes, very definitely. We see that. We hear that loud and clear from the investment community for sure.
Are there any types of projects that should not be offshore?
You know, from and I'm a software developer, so I see everything through the lens of that. From a software development standpoint, I really don't think, to me, software is building something.
Yeah.
You know, it's much like building a house. It's constructing. It's not necessarily inventing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Americans in the American marketplace are very safe as long as we own the customer relationship. Okay, so we want to utilize really good talent in other places that's a very good value to build things for our marketplace that we own. So I'm more concerned with keeping a hold on my marketplace, which is the real gasoline in our engine, and we make sure that we can execute with the best value resources we can use.
Yeah, I think that's the real lesson here. The world is changing, and that's a fact. That's nothing that we can do to change that fact. And we as software developers or steel mill workers, we need to adapt to that fact. And that doesn't mean that we're going to be out of work, but it probably means that our job's going to change a lot.
Right. I would say if you're a software developer, you know, find a way to get engaged. You know, I know a lot of single proprietor consultants who could expand their business this way. It's much what I did. Same way. I could still be a software developer, but I could use this other resources to expand my business and mark up their time, mark up their what I pay them, and make money off of it.
Dave, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you, David. I enjoyed it. The joys of working as an entrepreneur and building companies is be able to work with technology and work with friends at the same time that I meet along the way.